Thank you, Yin-Chen. Thanks for the introduction. Sorry, I couldn't be at Parameter Institute in person because of the visa issues. But then, you know, we can talk via this Skype call. And then let me tell you something about some of my recent works on strongly interacting topological physics of matter. And speaking of correlated physics, I think anybody work in condensed matter has at some point, you know, see or learn about this flat band paradigm. So, you know, the famous example is this fractional quantum Hall states. And this is a 2D electron gas, which has a, you know, applying a perpendicular magnetic field, the energy spectrum forms Landau levels. So there are flat bands, and then, you know, kinetic energies are completely quenched. So interactions among electrons become important, and then gives rises to the fractional physics in this 2D system. And with that success, people are trying to generalize that to crystals. They want to build a crystal version of this fractional quantum Hall state without any magnetic field. And the idea is quite similar, that they're trying to make a flat band in their band structure. So, you know, they start with a lattice model, and then they add in appropriate hopping terms. Then, you know, somewhere in the spectrum, you will have a very flat band. And then by partially filling this band, people argue that, you know, the same physics appeared in the fractional quantum Hall can appear in this crystal as well. And this is the fractional translator story. And let me just comment on the two shortcomings of this approach. The first thing is that, you know, in order to have a band as flat as possible, then sometimes you have to add long-range hopping terms, which could render the Hamiltonian non-local. The other thing is that, you know, for given a crystal, its chemical structure has limitations on the filling factors. So when you have filling factor that's beyond that limit, the chemical structure becomes unstable. So, you know, you do not enjoy the same degrees of freedom as you have for the fractional quantum Hall state. So, and let's not forget the most recent stories, the trendy ones, that is about twisted bilayer graphene. And the argument there is really that, you know, when you have two sheets of graphenes and then you line them up in certain angles, then, you know, they're trying to say that, okay, the low energy band structure of this system is again flat, which people believe gives rises to the mod insulator phase, or the even the superconductivity in this system. So that being said about flat band paradigm, you know, one can ask the question, do we have an alternative? You know, is it the only thing we can do to learn about or to study strongly correlated physics? So I would argue that maybe there's something else we can look into. So one example is in 1D, we know that we have this wonderful theory of Luninger liquid. It's basically the low energy physics of a 1D electron gas. So if we have a 1D electron gas, then it's a Fermi liquid, then we know that the energy is going to fill up to the Fermi surface. However, because we're in 1D, you know, we do not have a surface, but rather two points at the plus minus KF. So, you know, the low energy physics of this system can be approximated by this Luninger liquid model by, you know, approximating, or, you know, do a linearization around the Fermi points. And we know that, you know, the low energy excitation of the system is the particle hole excitations. But precisely because we're at this 1D, you know, because of the dimensionality, the particle hole excitation can only take place at momentum k equal to 0 or k equal to 2 kF. So this is the key point that gives rises to the abelian bosonization. And then, you know, that with the Luninger liquid together helps us to, you know, handle some of the strongly interacting problems in 1D exactly. And then, you know, the take-home message here is really that, you know, maybe Fermi points rather than Fermi surfaces are very useful in terms of handling interactions. And then we can see some related examples in higher dimension, in higher dimensions. So in 2D or 3D spatial dimensions, we can have materials that also, you know, has this quadratic band touching points. So basically, you know, you have some system that has two, you know, you have some quadratic, you know, bands with quadratic dispersion relations, and then they are touching at some points in the Brillouin zone. And, you know, since we have quadratic band touching or quadratic dispersion relations, then we have finite density of states, which we know that interactions could become important and relevant there. And one particular family of materials I want brought up is this family of materials that's called a pyrochloral iridates. And, you know, precisely at the gamma points, they have this quadratic Fermi knots. And, you know, it's argued by Balance and Shea in 2015 that these are parent states. These materials are parent states that could lead you to topological phases with strong interactions, because, you know, these are 5D transition metals. And one particular thing I want to look into is that if we focus on this critical phase or this critical state that the two bands are touching, then this thing could be at, say, a topological phase transition between a trivial system with no Chern number or Chern number zero to a topological system with non-zero Chern numbers. So this really leads to the following question. If we add interactions to systems that is near or at topological phase transitions, will that be a path that leads us to strongly interacting topological phases? And I want to use two examples or two projects I have worked with my advisor, Charles Kane, and our postdocs, Yuan Vanderbroos, to give some support evidence that this might be a very profitable a path towards realizing strongly interacting topological phases. So let me just get into this. So the first thing is about finding this Fibonacci topological order in topological superconductors. So before I talk about the Fibonacci part, let me first introduce the basic building block, the Marana fermions, which you can find in topological superconducting systems. So speaking of Marana fermions, they are antiparticles of themselves, and they're fermions from this operator algebra. And you know, in condensed matter context, then they're quasi-particles. They're basically, you know, superpositions of electron holes. And we know that recent theoretical work has point to us that, you know, we can indeed find Marana bound state in topological superconducting systems. So, you know, the famous examples are in 1D, the cation chain, which you have a lattice of Dirac fermions, and then depending on the dimerizations of writing the Dirac fermions in the Marana fermions, then there is a possibility that you could have dangling Marana modes on the end of the chain. And also, you know, the first example is really the P-wave superconductors that, you know, shown by Reed and Green that, you know, if you have a superconductor that's paired in P-wave fashion and then you're in this weakly paired phase, then, you know, this is actually a topological phases of matter with, you know, in this case with trend number one. So you are expecting to have a chiral Marana modes on the boundary. And, you know, for this system, you can sort of think of it as a superconductor version of this integral quantum Hall effect. So, you know, these are very nice proposals, but then how do you really realize this in experiments? One approach people take is really to use the proximity effect. Basically, the idea is that you couple a topological material, say a topological insulator, with superconductors or you know, with superconductivity. And the idea here is really that you're trying to split the Dirac fermions. So if you just look at the a chiral Dirac fermion mode, then, you know, it's nothing but two, you know, twice as, you know, the thermal hole conductance is twice as much as a Marana chiral modes. And, you know, written in this way, then it's saying that the Hilbert space of the Dirac fermions can be factorized into Hilbert space of two Majorana fermions, but if you just have this Dirac fermion on some surface of a topological material, then there's no way that these two Majorana fermions can be spatially separated. So you can only do that, if you introduce superconductivity and couple the superconductivity to the topological material using the proximity effect. And let me just give you example, which is this example of splitting of the integral quantum Hall transitions. So so here the topological material is indeed just this integral quantum Hall state. So if you just have a integral quantum Hall state, then you can start from an integral quantum Hall bar and then completely pinch off the system, and what you end up with is a insulator. So this is a transition from an integral quantum Hall to an insulator. But if you couple, if you use the proximity and couple the superconductivity to the integral quantum Hall bar, then what's entering into the superconductor originally is the Dirac fermion, but then in the superconductors, then it becomes two Majorana fermions, and then you can choose which Majorana fermions to pinch off by turning up a pairing potential, and then if you just pinch off one of them, then what's end up is that you have a superconductor with one chiral Majorana modes on the boundary. So this gives rise to this topological superconductor. Of course, you can turning up a pairing potential for the other one and then pinch off that one. So that will get you from this state to the insulator phase again. But then the moral of the story here is really that with the help of the extra superconductivity we introduced to the system, we can split the transition so that we're getting to something that you couldn't ordinarily get. So it's no longer that you get some topological material or vacuum. It's that you get some topological material and then you can get into some other topological material with the help of the superconductivity. And I hope you have this in mind for the later story involving Fibonacci's. And this is a very helpful picture for you to think about how do we really realize this Fibonacci topological order. And now let me get into the main course, which is the Fibonacci topological order. So let me just formally introduce this topological order, which has two anion types. One is the vacuum, the other is the Fibonacci anion. And then it has this non-trivial and non-abelian fusion rule, which just says that if you fuse two Fibonacci anions, you either get into the vacuum or you get back to the Fibonacci anion itself. And this gives rise to the ground state degeneracy of the system, which grows as the Grothendieck ratio to the number of Fibonacci anions. And the reason we study this is really that we learned that Fibonacci anions allows for universal quantum computations without need of any extra measurement operations. And let me just mention that previous proposals for realizing this specific topological order, the Fibonacci topological order, people really rely on this Z3 parafermion CFT or Z3 parafermion topological order. Basically, what this says is that once you can realize this Z3 parafermion topological order, you automatically have this Fibonacci anion in your theory. What you do next is really you separate this anion from the rest of the degrees of freedoms. So we have the famous re-reside state and also the recent proposal combining this nu equal to 2/3 fractional quantum Hall state with superconductors. But the moral behind these two approaches are the same, that they relying on first getting to the Z3 universality class. Okay, but as I was telling you that I'm trying to get this from Majorana fermions, and it seems like the best I can do is the Z2 universality class or the Ising CFT. But is that true? And it turns out that we can go beyond Ising and then get into this triquitical Ising universality class. And one example is has already been worked out by this paper by Franz and Affleck. So what they have is they have a 1D interacting Majorana fermion chains with the usual Hopping terms and then with this four fermion interaction terms. So if you only have this, then you know there's nothing you can do. You're staying this Ising universality class, but if you have this interaction term, and then if you turn up, so this is a numerical work, I should say first. If you turn up this G just big enough, then you get into this red dot, which, you know, this red dot is precisely this critical state described by this tricritical Ising CFT. So, you know, the tricritical Ising CFT have six types of anions. So, you can ask, okay, what is the relation between this with the Fibonacci? And something is hinting that there must be some relation, because if you look at this one, this particular anion, then this anion in this tricritical Ising topological order has the same fusion rule as the Fibonacci anion. So you can basically regard this as just another Fibonacci anion. And the full relation is revealed when I discovered that there is a very nice coset construction. You can relate both the tricritical Ising and the Fib with some really Majorana fermion theory. So, so if you look at this, say, CFT of the structure SO7 level 1, then this is really nothing but a system, or say, you know, in this case, it's a 1 plus 1D system with seven chiral Majorana modes. And then you have this very nice factorization. Basically, this is saying that, you know, the Hilbert space of this system can be nicely factorized into one part, which is the Fibonacci part. The other is the tricritical Ising part sector. Yeah. So just like the, you know, the splitting of the Dirac fermion story, you know, we know that the Hilbert space can be factorized. You know, the next question is really, how do you spatially separate these two degrees of freedom? So there is a chance that you can use one to realize a phase, or a 2 plus 1D phase. So let me just get into this. You can imagine you have a 1 plus 1D system with seven.
Sorry, Yuchen?
Yeah, go on.
Let me clarify and make sure I understand. Can I go back one slide?
Okay.
So here Fib means only one epsilon and nothing else?
That's right. This is the Fibonacci topological order.
And the tricritical Ising, I presume you mean the chiral branch of it, or?
Yeah. So think of these as chiral CFTs.
Okay. I see. Okay. Yeah.
So the tricritical Ising is the CFT that has the six types of anions.
Okay. Great. Thanks.
Right. So. The rest, you know, this part is really how do I spatially separate these two sectors? So imagine you start with a 1 plus 1D system that has both seven chiral Majorana modes moving to the right and then seven chiral Majorana modes moving to the left. So these are the red ones. These are the ones that on the top and the bottom. And so, you know, you can write on a Hamiltonian describing these chiral modes. But, you know, you can also now turning on a very specific full fermion interactions or current-current interactions. So what's specific about this interaction is really that, you know, these interactions are made out of the local Majorana fermion operators. But then these currents are the currents that only couples to this G2 level 1 part or sectors, because, you know, I will tell you that, you know, sorry. I will tell you that, you know, for G2 is a subgroup of the SO7 group. And then there are 21 generators for this SO7. And then there's 14 generators out of the 21 that generates this G2. So I can choose the 14 ones or the 14 currents that only couples to the G2 part. And then you know, I can form this interaction that couples the right movers to the left movers. But then the point is that really that this interaction is going to be marginally relevant. And then if the the interaction becomes more and more relevant, then you know it forms a obstruction for the G2 level one part of the sector coming from the left to go through, because you know there's a energy penalty for that. So the G2 level one sector or the FIB sector is going to be completely reflected, but then you know the tricritical Ising sector will not care anything about this interaction, and then it will go through without any problem. So this is a very nice way of spatially separating these two degrees of freedom. And but you know, I have to say that admit that you know this is a very specific interaction that that can do that. So with that said, I will try to use this as a building block to give me a 2+1D topological phase. So this will be relying on this network construction, and the starting point is really that you have a network of topological superconductors with turn number 7. So basically what this says is that each islands are topological phases of matter with 7 chiral Majorana modes running around on the boundary. Now you can use the specific interactions I said or I presented in the previous slide and then putting them among near neighbor islands. So what this achieves is really that, you know, you see that on the boundary of the whole system, you know, the G2 CFT or the G2 level one, you know, gapless mode have to skip around. It cannot get inside the system. So it will propagate all the way around the system. But if, you know, so you have a gapless mode on the boundary, but if you look inside the bulk, then you what you realize is that, you know, anything in any degrees of freedom in the bulk will be localized. It cannot go from one end to the other. It will only, you know, go around circles. So meaning that, you know, there's an energy needed to propagate from one, to take a degrees of freedom from one side of system to the other, you know, so basically you're getting a gapped bulk as a result. So this nicely helps you to realize this bulk edge correspondence for this phase. But then we know that, you know, this phase has to be the same topological phase that with topological order, that is the FIB topological order, because we know that what's propagating around on the boundary is indeed the gapless mode for the FIB topological order. Now, you can ask, can I get the other one? Is there a chance I can realize this tricritical Ising topological order? And, you know, indeed, there is a way to do that. And then in this way, I want you to think of this construction as what people do for the anti-Fafian state. So what you can do is that you can take a topological superconductor with turn number 7, and then you can put the Fibonacci topological ordered state on top of that. But then the edge theory is going to be counter-propagating. Then if you couple these two systems, then you realize is that, you know, there's not, you know, inside the bulk, everything else is still localized, so there's still a gap. But on the boundary, you know, what you're left with is actually you're left with the gapless mode for this tricritical Ising CFT, or, you know, this gapless mode for tricritical Ising. So, you know, this is a way of getting to the other phase from the coset. And then, you know, this has this analogy with the anti-Fafian. At least you can think of this in a nice way that's similar to the anti-Fafian. And I will just comment here that, you know, there's a reason why you have this 6 types of anions in your tricritical Ising topological order. because that if you think about the coarser structure of these topological orders, say the SO7 level one, then I believe in the modular tensor category level, that is the same modular tensor category as the Ising, and you know the fib is the fib. So what I want to say is that the modular tensor category structure of the tricritical Ising is nothing but a product of a fib and Ising. So that's why you have the six types of anions for the tricritical Ising, and then you can check the fusion rows of each of the six types will follow nicely, partly like Ising, and partly, you know, part of it is like Ising, and part of it is like the fib. So in other words, you can write the six types of anions as a composite thing, like one part is from the Ising, one part from the fib, and then the fusion rules follows in that sense. And you know, the point of this story or this example is really that if you look at the network construction, we have a system, you know, if you have nothing turned on between the islands, then this is just a trivial system. But then if we just putting on the Marana hopping terms, then without interaction, then this is a topological superconductor with turn number 7. So this system is near a topological phase transition that can take you from, you know, C equal to 0 to C equal to 7 halves. But then precisely because we have some non-trivial interactions we can play with, that takes us off from this phase transition and then gets us into some really exotic phases, which is this fib Fibonacci topological ordered phase, or say this anti-Fibonacci or this tricriticalizing topological ordered phase. And you know, that really echoes with what I'm trying to present, that you know, you adding interaction to a system near topological phase transitions that could maybe takes you off to some strongly interacting topological phases of matter. So I will be getting to second part. Before I do that, I will pause for questions. Yeah.
Right. So in this construction, do you have some picture for the anions in the bulk? I sort of understand what you're doing on the edge, but do you have a picture
in the bulk? So I would, you could imagine that you have the anion excitations, you know, say the Fibonacci anions from the, you know, from the, say the Fibonacci circles, right? The blue circles in the bulk. So I will comment on this is that, you know, these anions are themselves localized because, you know, there's no way you can take this without paying much energy penalties to go from to there. But they're not really they're not really confined. They're, you know, there's no string confining them. But in this construction, I can only say that they're localized. You know, you can have excitations, you know, here in the blue circles.
I see. You're saying on the trivial side, the blue circle and the red circle are always glued together. So separately they're confined. But on the right hand side, the blue circle kind of got freed from this red circle. So you should view them as deconfined excitation. Is that more or less?
Yeah, there's, you know, you can have as many excitations as you want. They're not going to be paneled by the string connecting them, and by, you know, the energy is proportional to the length of the string, right? But there's no string here. They're free, but they're just localized because I have this specific, you know, network construction.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, are there any other questions regarding the first part?
So practically, how do you implement the interactions you want? So in principle, you can have many different types of interactions. And to realize your proposal, you need a very specific type of current kind.
Right. So what I can comment on this is really, okay, you're right that I'm not really sure, you know, what kind of construction, what kind of generic interaction I can start with, and then gradually, say under RG flows, that gives me this. I'm not sure. I can only say that this is a very specific interaction I put in there, and then you know, it seems like I'm only talking about a point in the phase diagram, right? You know, this, this point corresponding to this specific interaction. But the point is really that once you have the, this interaction, and then, you know, you, you get this a system into the topological phase, then you can deviate from that a little bit. Perturbatively, you are safe because it's a topological phase, you know, it's gapped. If you ask me, how do I start with a generic interaction and then get into this specific form, then there's no comment. I do not know.
So could you remind me, this term is marginally irrelevant or marginally relevant?
This is marginally relevant. If it's marginally irrelevant, I won't be talking about this, you know. It's going to be marginally relevant, yes.
Okay, yeah.
So you know, you can get it flow, you know, you do not have to have. So, you know, you can compare with this interaction they have. You know, if you just take the face value, then this is going to be irrelevant.
Yeah. So then I guess even in your.
So then they use the numerical thing to show that, you know, it's possible that that will play a role, but at a very large G. Well, for our case, you know, we do not have to rely on anything numerical, but because it will flow. It will flow to strong coupling.
So can you select this interaction just by some symmetry? Or, I mean, sometimes you just specify.
Maybe some symmetry that relates to the G2, but this is too exotic. I couldn't even comment on this.
Okay.
But the point is that, you know, this 14 terms are precisely what you needed for the G, you know, it's precisely the terms that only couples to the G2, nothing else.
Okay, yeah, thanks.
Yeah, I do not know how to say this, how to describe these as a symmetry, say, you know, what kind of physical symmetry that has this G2, I'm not sure. I think it's too much to ask for.
Oh, sorry, maybe a different question.
Yeah,
so my impression is this Fibonacci is modular, right? In principle, you shouldn't really need fermion, local fermion to realize it. Is that right?
I think so. It's not going to be a fermionic one, yes.
Right, so is this the fact that you're constructing it out of it's a model of, let's say, Majorana fermions, is that more like a convenience or is it somehow necessary still? But
Well, I think, you know, you can regard my version as a, you know, Z2 parafermion.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So somehow this fib is sort of in between the Z2 and Z3.
Okay.
It's like, you know, if you go to the Z3, it's too much because not only do you have the fib, but you also have something else.
Right.
So it's that you have to have the interacting Z2, then you have this fib.
Okay.
Oh, you know, using this coset, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you only have the Z2, then, you know, it's not interacting, then there's nothing interesting.
Okay. Yeah,
so what I want to emphasize is really that this thing is in between the Z2 and Z3. All right. So maybe I should proceed to the second part. If there's no more questions. Okay, let me do this. So the second part is, again, I would think this will be example that's supporting my picture that, you know, interactions near or at topological phase transitions is going to lead me to something interesting. And then this something here is the fractional excitonic insulator. So I'm trying to do, again, another version of this crystal version of the fractional quantum Hall state. But, you know, instead of focusing on the flat bands, you know, we're going to study a system, a two-band system with both electron holes and with, you know, quadratic band dispersion relations. And I will try to argue that the higher angular momentum pairing between electron and holes will be the key that leads to this fractional phase. But before I get into the interacting case, let me first convince you that you can view, you can get a chain insulator from the same system by P-wave pairing. So let's look at a generic system that you can have, a two-band system that is that has a quadratic band dispersion relations with some Dirac mass, and then the electron holes are paired in this P-wave channel. So, you know, this is very much like the P-wave superconductor story, and then we can adopt the their formalism to help us solve the Hamiltonian. Basically, we can learn from what Reed and Green did in their case, and then construct a BCS-like ground state. And here, let me say this M here is really the M corresponding to the angular momentum pairing. So, you know, this is a P-wave pairing, so M is equal to 1. And this vacuum here is really that, you know, if you look at the two-band system, the valence band is completely filled, and then the conduction band is completely empty. So that's our starting point. And then, you know, using the formalism, we can calculate the pairing function for this Hamiltonian. Basically, the pairing function will be encoding the topological information of the system. And, you know, if you look at the, depending on the sign of the mass term, if mass term is greater than zero, then, you know, we're getting to this uninverted band structure, which, you know, this is the same as, you know, this is analogous to the strongly paired phase in the P-wave superconductors. There's no topology, turn number is zero. And if M is smaller than zero, the Dirac mass is smaller than zero, then we get into this phase, which is the inverted case. And this corresponds to the weakly paired phase in the P-wave superconductors. And then there we know that there's a turn number is equal to one. So if a mass term is, Dirac mass term is smaller than zero, then we're getting to this turn insulator phase, precisely from a system with electron holes in this P-wave paired fashion. And you know, we can use that to calculate our ground state. So the ground state is going to be a superposition of states with different numbers of electron hole pairs. And then, you know, you can calculate for a fixed number of electron hole pairs, then the wave function follows from doing this integral, and then this turns into the determinant of the pair function, and then gets into this form. So, you know, this step is really follows from a mathematical identity. It's called Cauchy's identity, and then the ZIs are the coordinates for the electrons, and the WJs are the coordinates for the holes. So, you know, so we have a wave function for this non-interacting system, which, you know, which is a train insulator, which is in a system, in a two-band system with electron holes, and then the electron holes are paired in this P-wave fashion. So if you believe me in that, then we can go ahead and then ask, can we learn something about the fractional phase? And you know, first what we can do is that, you know, like what Laughlin has tried to conjecture what is the wave function for this fractional phase. And I would just say for a M that's greater than one, then, you know, the wave function could be, we conjecture it to be the non-interacting case to the M's power. And again, you know, the ground state is gonna be a superposition of different numbers of electron and hole pairs. Let me just mention that this is an early work, you know, before us has already noticed this wave function. But, you know, in terms of this trial wave function, it looks like a Laughlin type or Hopperin type wave function. But there are differences. One difference is that, you know, there's no Gaussian factor in this wave function. And then, you know, we have a little bit of a singular denominator, which if really the electron holes are trying to get close, we have to add some hardcore short distance cutoff. But then, you know, this is a wave function we conjecture. The next step is really that we're trying to ask from this trial wave function, can we see that the trial wave function describes some system that that has the fractional quantum Hall of physics? So, one thing we can do is really that we can do a composite fermion theory, by do a gauge, singular gauge transformation. So what this little a does is really that this attaches m minus 1 fluxes to the electrons in the system, and then it attaches minus m minus 1 fluxes to the holes in your system. And, in the mean field level, if we have the same density of electron holes to start with, then what's the average B field that the composite fermion C is going to be zero. So in this case, then if we assume that the composite fermions, they're gapped, meaning they form some train insulators, then you can integrate out the fermions, and then you can integrate out the little a's. The EM response from that is going to tell you that your original system will have a desired hole conductance, which is 1 over m, which basically says if we trust the composite fermion analysis, then the original system will be have the same nu equal to 1 over m fractional quantum Hall physics. Of course, there's another check you can do. Basically, you can play with the plasma analogy. So let me just briefly say this, do this for the Laughlin wave function. If you do that, then, if you calculate the modulus of the wave function for the Laughlin wave function, then, you get a partition function for the classical plasma. And, it's basically a one component of plasma with some density of a positive background charge density to sort of help you to neutralize the plasma. And then the background charges are precisely from this Gaussian factor. And then what you can conclude from this plasma picture is really that if this M is smaller than 11, then this plasma is perfectly screening, meaning that there's no long-range correlations between the charges in the plasma. So, Laughlin conclude from that the state you're studying is actually going to be gapped. So you're getting to this gapped phase, which is this, fractional quantum Hall state. And, you can do a similar plasma analogy for our wave function. But what you're going to get is really that you're going to get a two-component plasma, because in this time you will have both plus and minus charges in your system. But then, as I said, you want the same density for both the plus charges and then the minus charges. So overall, the plasma is still going to be neutral. And, now you can map really this classical plasma into the XY model, because you can, map the plus charges to the vertexes, the minus charges to the anti-vertexes. And then you will, the phase diagram there is really described by this Costello-Salas picture. So, if you take M equal to 1, then you know that it's going to flow off to the screening phase of your plasma, or, the screening phase there, then you know that it's a gapped phase, so you have the confidence to conclude that you get this integer quantum Hall physics for your m equal to 1 state. But there's a little bit of trouble if you go beyond 2. If the fugacity of your electron hole system is not large enough, then there is a chance that your electron holes fluid is again going to flow back to this bound state. So anything here is going to be a bound state that the electron holes are, again, strongly bounded to each other. They're really not talking to each other. But if you have the fugacity large enough, then you have a chance really that, it flows off again to the screening phase, get you into this gapped phase. And, here you should really think that you have a very, a dense electron hole fluid that, the electron holes start to talking to each other, the bonds start to break and then they start to talking to each other, and then they start to screen each other. So that's why, you know, you can expect that, you know, this takes you off and then getting you into a screening plasma again, and then getting into the scap phase. So, you know, in terms of the trial wave function, then we believe that, you know, there are enough evidence to support that this is a trial wave function that describes some system that has this fractional quantum Hall physics. Of course, you know, I just said about a wave function. I didn't say anything about this system. Then maybe we can do what you know, what Arovas and Gurvan did a long time ago. Basically, they played a game, and I quote here that we should do just the opposite: start with the ground state and then solve for the Hamiltonian, matching questions to answers as in the show Jeopardy. So. You know, it turns out that, you know, actually we do have a construction that has the, these two operators that we constructed that annihilates the ground state that we proposed. So, you know, let me just briefly comment on how should you think about these operators. So it has two parts, you know, this is the first part and this is the second part. This is saying that if I act the first part on this ground state, then this is basically saying that I'm trying to annihilate an electron from a system with n pairs of electron holes. That will be the same as adding a hole to a system with n minus one pairs of electron holes. But we know that the ground state is superposition of different numbers of pairs of electron holes. So, you know, if you act the first on the ground state and then you act, you know, you have the second one acting on the ground state, and then, you know, there's a way you can think that they will cancel each other because we put a minus sign here. So that's a brief way of looking at this operator and why this annihilate this ground state. And then let me just comment that the interaction is again encoded in this little statistical vector potential, you know, that's getting the interaction sort of from the really the density of the electron holes, and you know, basically this Hamiltonian that's made out of these operators is going to annihilate and then take this state as the zero energy ground state. So you might ask, okay, is there any physical intuition that we can learn from this Hamiltonian? It seems like it's very contrived. It's not, or, you know, can you convince me that if this Hamiltonian is going to be gapped? Unfortunately, I couldn't. And this Hamiltonian is indeed very complicated, because you can imagine that for large M, I will have, you know, interaction term that you know goes as the power 2 to the m minus 1. So it will be a lot of many body terms that's sort of encoding the interaction. So it's indeed a little bit hard to analysis. But what you can do is that you know, basically what you can do is that you can turn off the interaction and then see what that tells us about the Hamiltonian in the non-interacting limit. And then what we checked is really that, you know, for m equal to 1, of course, you know, for m equal to 1, you do not even have to turn off the A term, because, you know, m equal to 1, there's no interacting terms. But then the m equal to 1 case, the Hamiltonian is indeed the p-wave pairing excitonic system. So, which is a very good sign, so that, you know, it means like the Hamiltonian is actually in the right track, on the right track, and you know, we can ask the same question for m bigger than one. What we have is a band structure, again a two band system with quadratic band touching points at gamma. This time it's a critical phase. And then the electron holes are paired in this higher angular momentum, this m p plus ip to the m angular momentum channel. And you know, you can again follow the BCS way of solving this Hamiltonian, And then getting to this wave function for this critical system, then what you find is that for a fixed number of electron holes, you know, the wave function looks something like this, where this P is again some polynomial in terms of the electron in the hole coordinates. But now something interesting happens. If you compare the desired wave function we propose for the fractional phase and the you know, the wave function we have for this non-interacting critical phase from the Hamiltonian, then we see that they have the same denominators. Denominators, yes. But the only difference is on the numerators. And let me just say that they have the same number of zeros on the numerators for both cases. So the only difference is really that for this wave function we proposed for the interacting case, the zeros are all on top of the particles. And for this critical phase, the zeros are only, you know, only these zeros are on top of particles because you want to make sure the fermionic statistics. But for the other zeros in this polynomial, they are sort of sit in between particles. They are sort of wasted. So here we conjecture, if we have a system that's at this critical phase, then adding some short-range repulsive interactions, that will be very effective of putting the zeros back on top of the particles, and then maybe taking this phase to the fractional phase and take this wave function to the fractional, you know, trial wave function. And let me not forget to mention that if you look at this non-interacting Hamiltonian, that this non-interacting Hamiltonian, this critical phase is precisely at a topological phase transition from a trivial trivial insulator to a chain insulator with chain number m, which is fixed by this angular momentum channel. And let me just go ahead.
Just make sure. So this wave function, can I go back one slide? So that wave function, so that z minus z m w minus w m divided by z minus w m. If I forget about things like Gaussian factor or the fact that the denominator looks singular, it looks basically just like an ordinary Hopperian hierarchical state, right?
Yeah. So it will. So you're saying about this one.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this one will be like if it.
Well, is that like
M minus
M state?
Hovering. Yeah, M minus M, but then remember, yeah, you're right. You know, remember that the Hovering states always have a Gaussian factor, and then you know, this you do not have.
So what difference does that make exactly? So for example, if you're saying this is a topological order, what's the K matrix of that?
Well, if it's described by some Chern Simons, then it will be the same K matrix as a Laughlin's, as a Laughlin nu equal to 1 over m state. So it's just a number.
Oh. So you're saying with the Gaussian factor and the regular denominator, it's mm minus m state, but without the Gaussian factor, it's Laughlin 1 over m state?
Yeah, but. You know, so okay. In the case of you're really trying to think about this as a, say, a bilayer system, right?
Right.
It's sort of like, you know, for one layer you have the electrons, for the other layer you have the holes, and then there's a pairing term between the electron and the holes.
Uh-huh.
So, for this wave function, I claim, and then you know, for the previous slides, I'm trying to convince you that this wave function describes a state that has the same topological order as a nu equal to 1 over m Laughlin state.
I see.
But you know, if you talk about a ordinary Hopperian, then it's going to be you know, M, M, N, and then none of the numbers are going to be negative, right? All of them are going to be positive.
Well, in principle, I can have, let's say, Z minus Z some power, W minus W some power, and then Z star minus W star some power. That thing will give me a
minus. Yeah, but I understand, but you see that, you know, if it's that case, then I believe you have to involve some sort of Landau level mixing.
Oh, yeah, sure.
To introduce the short distance cutoff. But then for this case, I can just build in the short distance cutoff because, you know, there's no holomorphicity constraint for the wave function because I'm not really doing any Landau levels.
Sure.
Right. So, yeah, so I think there's some differences you have to be careful about.
Okay. All right, thanks.
All right.
So
I guess I will just...
Can I try to wrap up in 5 minutes?
Yeah, I'm about to finish. So let me just, I'm sorry about the beginning. It's the sound is not working. So let me just say the last part, which is, okay, maybe I can study what kind of material or really crystal structures that can give rise to this higher angular momentum structure or, you know, higher angular momentum band inversion. Then maybe the best you can do in crystals is really that a crystal with C6 rotational symmetry, so that you know you are allowed to have this p plus ip to the cube, the angular momentum pairing, and you know, then you can imagine you have some s state or s orbital, and then the conduction band is the f orbital. Then if you really invert the bands, you know, there's really angular momentum difference by 3, and the trend number again is going to be changed by 3 at the transition. You know, we argue that you know, by putting interactions that could be interesting and leads to something, you know, like this fractional excitonic insulator phase, and also we have a paper that you know sort of explains or explores the possible band engineering aspect of this phase, of this non-interacting phase and non-interacting Hamiltonian. And let me just conclude that in this talk, I'm trying to bring you a picture that putting interactions near topological phase transitions could be a possible route that leads us to strongly interacting topological phases of matter. And there are two examples I presented, the Fibonacci phase and also the fractional excitonic phase. So for future directions, you know, of course, it would be nice to work out some field theory versions of the phases I just mentioned, so I know, you know, what kind of mass terms I turn up or down to get me into either the non-interacting phases or the more exotic phases, so I know how the phases are connected. And then, of course, you can ask what kind of materials that realize this higher angular momentum inversion. And can we also extend this picture to other strongly interacting topological phases? And by that, I thank you for your attention.
So we have some time for one or two questions. So maybe let me start. So in your first example, the phase transition you have is like trivial state with a trend number 7 state, I mean, a topological superconductor, right? So then the particle theory is just like 7 Majorana fermions, I mean, in the bulk. The critical theory is
just
7 free Majorana fermions. How can I imagine that from this free CFT, which operator do I turn on such that I can drive it into the topological order you described? So you give us a description on the, what happened on the edge, but I'm asking that in the bulk, how can I think about this state?
Yeah, that's a good question. That really, I think, relies on the continuum limit, you know, the field theory part. I'm not sure I can answer that question because, you know, it will be very interesting to develop a field theory for this model or this, you know, this system that, you know, you started with some topological superconducting system and then there is some math term you add on and then drives you into the exotic interacting phases. But unfortunately, I do not know what kind of field theory that is.
Okay, so this coset CFT, does it have some sigma model kind of representation? If it does, maybe there is a way to construct that.
Sigma model.
Is it clear? I mean, for SO7 level 1, then obviously one can have something like that. But for the coset, I guess if you can have that for SO7 level 1, maybe you can have that for coset. Because once you know the sigma model,
I understand. I think you're maybe trying to go the way of the, say, SO3, you know, spin chain, and then there's some, right?
Yeah, so some analog of that.
So, but the thing I'm a little bit puzzled is really that it seems like there's no double cover for this.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So... You know, I think I'm glad you mentioned this because, you know, I and Charlie are trying to, at the first, I'm trying to come up, say, like a 1D version, 1 plus 1D spin chain version that maybe you can do something. But it seems like it's different from, you know, the SO3 and then SU2 story that you have this double cover and then there's something you can fractionalize. But this thing is actually, it's very stubborn. There's no double cover you can play with.
I see. Okay.
But I'm not sure if that means that you do not have this sigma model that you can play with. Maybe there is. I haven't explored that.
I see.
Yeah.
I see. Yeah, because once you have a sigma model thing, you probably can say something about the bulk as well.
Right. Understand.
Yeah.
But you know, this is some open questions that
sure.
I hope. It could be answered someday.
Any other question? So if that's not the case, let's thank the speaker again.